Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. As the adage goes, a playoff series doesn't start until the home team wins a playoff game. So clearly that has not happened yet. San Antonio Spurs, not done. They get a big win over the New York Knicks. Steve and I talked through everything we saw in the game three. Tweaks, adjustments, lineup fun moments. We talk about it all. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another late night edition of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Monday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Let's talk some game three of the NBA Finals because we may have a series, Nikias. The San Antonio Spurs said, not so fast.
We may have a series indeed. As the old adage says, Steve, a series doesn't start until a home team wins a gosh darn game. Clearly, we're just not going to get a home win in this series so far. The Knicks take care of business in San Antonio for the first two. The San Antonio Spurs walk into this hostile environment. First home finals game for the New York Knicks in well over 20 years. And we get Stephon Castle setting a tone early, Victor Wembanyama setting a tone early, Dylan Harper driving all over the place, active defense, aggressive offense, more intentional offense from the San Antonio Spurs. And here we are, a 115-111 victory for the San Antonio Spurs. The Knicks still lead the series 2-1. But as you already alluded to, we may just have a series if the Spurs found some things. So I guess just to kick things off, Steve, what were some of your broader takeaways from this one?
All of my broader takeaways were here, Nikias, because it was a great basketball game. I think the biggest thing you think about is the Spurs talked about what they wanted to do. A lot of talk about the quotes from the Spurs between game two and game three. Why would they speak in this manner? How would they talk about in this way? Well, what are they supposed to do? They're competing for a championship and believe they can win. And then they went out and won game three. And I think it goes back to kind of what Wemby said going into this, like what we don't know may be our advantage. And so you're not necessarily supposed to go down 2-0 at home, go into that Madison Square Garden, which was ablaze at the start of that game. You heard the noise when the Knicks initially came out. And then you have to navigate, once again, 2 to 3 different games within a game. I think the most important thing is it kind of like this ebb and flow, this back and forth between these two teams is wild because, once again, we see the San Antonio Spurs say, we're going to defend our tails off. And we're going to find a new offensive thing to poke at. And that was something we talked about before. Where it's like, okay, Karl-Anthony Towns, would you like to defend in pick and roll? I mean, actually defend. Mm-hmm. Your drop, you're going to have to engage. We're gonna put 2 feet in the paint. Stephon Castle is going to make sure that he engages you in action. It's not going to be your guards and wings can recover, and now you can recover back to Wemby, and you guys can tag Wemby on the roll and feel good about this. No. We're going to just... Mm-hmm. And we saw in game two, they played off those tags early. It's like, okay, cool. That's what y'all doing. We'll skip pass. We'll drive. Still did some of that today. But there's a clear emphasis on getting Cat engaged and trying to get downhill. And so I thought that was the most important thing to talk about. Plenty to hit in this one. What was your first takeaway? Because I thought Stephon Castle set the tone. Wemby was able to get some rolls early in this one. They saw unders. They said, mm-hmm. You know what? Rescreen. We're going to keep playing through it. But then that didn't really matter because the Knicks hung around, and then the Knicks had that second quarter where by the end of that second quarter, Nikias, Victor Wembanyama's rotations were being poked at. They were making him fly mm-hmm. around and make multiple efforts. So, again, a lot to talk about, but what stood out to you?
I think for me, just 10,000-foot view take is I have loved the back and forth between these two teams. And as I was kind of tweeting throughout late in the fourth quarter, like you just kind of have to put each other away. If you don't put the Spurs away, as we saw towards the end of game two, we will get stops. We will drive in transition. We will find things to poke at. And as we saw in this game three, if you do not put the New York Knicks away, here's OG Anunoby with a shot. Here's Jalen Brunson driving and knocking down pull-ups all over the place. Like, both of these teams have such a collective will and fight about it. And I love that. And I think kind of dialogue. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, let's stay there real quick, because I think that's the interesting part. One of the interesting parts of this game three, the Spurs had always felt like they were not able to create separation from the Knicks. And the Knicks being able to create separation at the end of that second quarter, going into that third quarter, and the Spurs to bring that back, and then we get to the fourth, and the Spurs just have just enough separation. And this is after the Wimby and one that was challenged and not an and one. Like, there were several sequences in the balance where it felt like whatever little 5 to 6 point advantage the Spurs had would go right back. I think of those two, what was it, Fox and Castle, who had those blocks in the fourth quarter, where it's just like those little type of plays add up. But I for me, I'm just like, the Spurs being able to respond the way they did in that second half was huge for them, obviously to win the game. But in this series, they have to develop a finisher and they have to be able to stick around with the Knicks.
Like, there have been, I guess to that point, Steve, there have been so many, like, mini sequences, little swings in each of these games where you can kind of look back and say, man, if that goes the other way, where is this game going? Like, I think back to, I want to say first half, the Jordan Clarkson sequence, where he, like, steals the baseline, gets to steal the baseline, tries to throw an outlet, it gets picked off, and then it's a Stephon Castle and one. Just like, well, that is deeply unfortunate in a game that's probably going to end up being close. And sure enough, it ended up being close. But I guess to actually dig into the takeaways, I kind of want to bounce off of what you said a little bit earlier. Stephon Castle and Victor Wembanyama looking as comfortable as they did early in this game, as decisive as they were, I think that was kind of the story of the game for me with the San Antonio Spurs. Like, there's plenty to get into in, like, what the Spurs actually ran, how they moved Wemby around the board, where he screened from, stuff like that. More than anything, they were just in attack mode and didn't waste time getting downhill. Like, I loved your point about making Cat engage in the drop and pick and roll, because it felt like this was the first time all series long that the Spurs consistently got to him. Let's get into these high pick and rolls with two screeners. I know you're going to drop back. We're not going to do the probing thing, actually. We know you're going to try to hit Wemby to try to slow him down. We're going right at your chest. Let's see what you want to do about it. And very early on in that game, Stephon Castle got off to the hot start, knocks down a couple of threes on top of that. I was like, okay, Stephon Castle is here. Victor Wembanyama, similar bit. Like, they did find some ways to move him around to get him a little bit more open in pick and roll. But also, there was a possession early in that first quarter where he just gets an outlet off of a made basket. I think off of a made Josh Hart three. Wemby right wing, pump fake, Landry Shamet goes flying. Let me get downhill and get to the basket. It's like, okay, let's just get the easy stuff. More than anything, let's just be in attack mode. Let's see if we can get this Knicks group on their heels. And let's be able to play out of that. Like, you felt that in the first half of game two, where we talked about the Knicks and their aggressive help, the Spurs being able to kind of attack and play out of those closeouts. This was just them taking the fight to the Knicks. Like, game two felt like we are countering what you're doing. Game three, at least early on, felt like we are dictating the terms on offense. And I think if you're the New York Knicks, that is something that you can't afford to a large degree, to their credit, in that second quarter, in that second half, battled back, fought back and forth. Game was just in the balance for most of it. But seeing the Spurs dictate terms to that degree was something that popped for me. And it started with Stephon Castle and Victor Wembanyama.
Well, I like that. Now, I kind of want to highlight what Stephon Castle did early in that game as far as being able to run out of that high horns. They ran that the Knicks had said, you're not going to run anymore. So, you know, if our team could pull those plays up potentially of the Spurs running horns. But Stephon Castle being able to kind of navigate and put pressure on the Knicks within that. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt about that set early on after game two? And now seeing in game three, they got Cat to hedge at half court and Wemby got a lob. Stephon Castle was able to get downhill and get in the paint. They were to force help and get a kick to De'Aaron Fox based on what they were doing. Like, that was clutch stuff from Stephon Castle. So I thought that was really key. I think overall, the battle still remains the same between the Knicks and the Spurs to a degree, which I think is fantastic, which is still the Spurs and their defense and their rotations and them flying around against the Knicks and their ball movement and them wanting to spray the ball and find the right openings and how that plays out in different parts of the game. Because you're going to have these moments where Victor Wembanyama, like, again, it's not who specifically Victor Wembanyama guards, right? It's more, oh, there we go. We got the horns right here. So Stephon Castle getting downhill, gets right in the Cat's chest. I'm gonna get a kick. We can play out of it. Like, that's the fun stuff for me if I'm San Antonio. That's the stuff I want to bookmark. That's stuff we didn't see in the first two games, Nikias. They never got to that second level of the Knicks defense. So I figured that was something I'd want to point out. Do you have any thoughts about the horns set from the Spurs?
don't know. I think you mostly nailed it on that front. The Knicks were still pretty committed to making sure we want to take away the Wimby roles any way that we can. And I think Stephon Castle being that aggressive, that's how you get more out of that particular setup. It can't be, I am probing and waiting. Wimby's also getting hit. And now the Knicks just kind of get to reset their defense. And now you have to work deeper into the clock. And something that we've talked about broadly with the Spurs all year long is that they can do a lot of different things. What exactly is the thing that they can get to consistently? Well, Stephon Castle saying, well, fine, I'll just drive. It almost didn't matter if Victor Wembanyama was getting tagged on those roles or not, because Stephon Castle could force attention, get the kick out to get to the basket himself. And what we saw, I guess, outside of this set as well, just some of the more delayed roles from Victor Wembanyama, knowing that the help is coming, I kind of mosey on over. And so while we're getting paint pressure from whoever's driving, whether that's Castle, Harper, De'Aaron Fox, Wimby's just kind of lurking around that free throw line area. And so if there wasn't something there, we have the kick out, or here's Victor Wembanyama 12 feet from the basket now. Now do you want to deal with Victor Wembanyama? Can you afford to send help, you know, a little bit later in the clock, a little bit later in the possession? I felt like that was pretty smart from the San Antonio Spurs. But again, something that you already hit on, Steve, it's Stephon Castle and the guards overall kind of setting the tone, hitting first, getting downhill like that.
It's the most important thing. And so I want to make sure we highlighted that. So thank you, Nikias. Back to my defense, offense point between the Knicks and the Spurs, the battleground that is. It's always interesting how that plays out, though, right? Because you have these moments where the Spurs remind the Knicks, hey, we are flying around. It's not exactly who Victor Wembanyama starts to play on. It's where he's at positionally. It's what you're running around him. It's when he switches, how he looks to switch. And then the Knicks being able to poke at that as the game progresses gets interesting. Because now it's like, we're going to make you be in a position where, okay, we haven't exchanged, and maybe you were on Josh Hart, but now that's OG Anunoby. And we know you want to help, so we're going to pull in a Jalen Brunson drive, and we're going to have him turn the corner. We know you want to pull in and help. That's a spray to OG Anunoby, and now you have to make a closeout. This is not the set, hey, Wimby can kind of point, the guards can fly around, rotate, he can kind of get to cat diving or stick around a big. No, they put pressure on him to make multiple efforts and close out. And so that's where it's like the Knicks are going to have to continue to work to find the gaps, get to drive and kick, get to drone penetration. And the Spurs are going to have to find a way to be cleaner with how and when Wimby pulls himself into the paint. Not necessarily staying low as the low man on that block, but when he decides to commit to, I'm sliding into the paint. Does that make sense? There's a difference between when he's sitting and waiting as opposed to, no, I'm sliding, I'm full and commit. Because it's hard for him with his size, as good as he is defensively, to make the two steps in, then make the steps back out, and then get his weight to contain a drive. And so the Knicks have success with that. And then he ends up matched up with someone who's a shooter, and it gets interesting. But, like, those are the doldrums there that are interesting. Hey, you know, Nikias, before I swing the ball back, can I tell you what the funniest sequence of this game was for me?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you remember the second quarter when Cat was mildly adjacent, close to foul trouble, and the Knicks were like, we're going small, and the Spurs were like, well, Luke Kornet's out there, and everyone on the court decided we're going to drive the basketball for literally 45 minutes straight, or 45 seconds straight. Everyone decided we're driving to the basketball. We're going to get a layup. That was one of the highlights of the game for me. That was very funny, so like that one.
No, I think we both ended up clipping the same sequence. We're just like, okay, well, here's Jalen Brunson get downhill. Wait, here's Dylan Hart. Wait, who? Nobody could get a beat on anybody up these drives. No. And then we're just inbounding while someone's on the ground. Let's get this ball ahead as quickly as possible. And let's just one up each other on these drives. I had such a blast. Like, normally, I think we're both the same way, where we're clipping things and posting on the timeline, but we're trying to sprinkle in like the actual analysis piece. Mm-hmm. It's like this is what you should be looking for on this play. I think on that, I just really put in all caps, are we watching these drives? Because it's like, what the heck is any of this? Also, a lot of Jordan Clarkson tonight for the New York Knicks. Landry Shamet didn't have the three ball going. They kind of needed the randomness and the aggression from Jordan Clarkson tonight. So shout out to him for stepping up when his number was called upon. But yeah, I'm right there with you. That was an incredibly funny / fun / electrifying sequence where everyone's like, all right, cool. Actually, while we're here, Steve, I have some broader thoughts, but while we're talking about the sequence, how did you feel about the Knicks actually tapping the OG at the 5 button?
I liked it. I mean, I think with what OG brings to the table, it's not just the Wimby matchup. It's his ability to kind of play at the level, recover, contest, and also the spacing element where we can just kind of do different things. Now, the other portion is like the minutes when Josh Hart is out there. You can also, if Josh Hart and Cornet are out there, Hart can just be a screener and you can kind of be a little bit quote-unquote normal. But I like it. I think it's going to be intriguing to see if they ever really want to tap that button again. You know, it felt like 7 minutes for Mitchell Robinson was not what I was expecting. But, you know, this is the finals. You got to find a way to win the game. Let's see. Where are we at? How did you feel? Did you have any other Spurs thoughts while we're here? Actually, you know what? We tip of the cap to De'Aaron Fox. I think you got to give a tip of the cap to De'Aaron Fox. I understand that he's gonna get a lot of heat for his roles in this offense. But when he hits the notes, you kind of point and say, hey, he's here for a reason. And he was important as far as Jalen Brunson comes back in. Jalen Brunson's in foul trouble. Let's put Jalen Brunson in action. It's time to boogie. Let me get downhill and go. Carlton Towns, come get a high pick and roll. I'm going to keep you engaged. Wimby's going to slip behind you. I'm going to throw a lob. And then fourth quarter, Jalen Brunson hits massive three. Mitch Johnson says, don't worry about it. We're not calling timeout. De'Aaron Fox has the ball. Wimby's looking to set a screen. Carlton Towns says, no,
you're Ashley, not you come here.
And De'Aaron Fox goes and get a bucket. And that's like, in theory, why you went to go get him. Like, this is right here. Kat said, no, you're not screening. And De'Aaron Fox said, fine. It's tween has the time to step back. This is what I do. So that was, you got to tip out to Fox.
I'll get to the mini. That's all fine. I love the shout out to De'Aaron Fox. I think he deserved it for the way that he helped slam the door for the San Antonio Spurs in this one. I think to answer your question of if I had more Spurs thoughts, one, let me start with what I should have opened the show with. Just the basic box score numbers here. We talked about Victor Wembanyama and Stephon Castle, et cetera, setting the tone. 32-8-6 for Victor Wembanyama to go along with two steals and three blocks. That seems pretty good. Stephon Castle with 23-5-5 is still on the block. That also seems pretty darn good in this one. And I think more broadly speaking, I was looking at cleaning the glass before we hopped on here, Steve. A 107.4 offensive rating in the half court for the San Antonio Spurs tonight, which is pretty easily the best mark that they've had in this series so far. And I think a lot of that speaks to, again, the overall aggression from the top two guys, the level of intentionality that they had, the way that they moved Victor Wembanyama around the board, both in terms of the play types, got some off-ball screens, used them in horns, used them in double drag. Sometimes these screens are being set near half court. Sometimes he's starting it around the free throw line area or the top of the key and then rolling, and he's basically a step away from the rim. I think it was a pretty good offensive game plan for Mitch Johnson and the San Antonio Spurs. I wanted to highlight that and the fact that the half-court offense in particular was as effective as it was. And this is where I think they started the game shooting pretty well from three. It ended up being a 35% from three night. So, like, that's fine-ish, but it speaks to the interior dominance that they had. And for them to have that success in the half-court is pretty big. And if you're the New York Knicks, hey, some tough shots are going to be made, but we can't let them dictate terms the way that they did for large stretches of this basketball game. So I want to salute the Spurs offense as a whole.
No, I'm sticking there, and sorry, chat, to the victor goes to spoils. We'll talk about the Knicks here shortly. I think the battle for the Spurs is going to be finding that half-court thing on a nightly basis that they can anchor themselves around beyond the Wimby, beyond the guards, and finding the right, I don't even know if I want to use the words pace and or tempo, finding the right flow for them where they're not going a million miles an hour and going too quick, and they're not taking the air out of the ball. Because some of these transition like drives, this is a deeply personal example I'll use. It felt like the height of Oregon football, playing really fast, and they get two first downs and then punt, but they only took a minute and 30 seconds off the clock. And it's like, hey, we sure could have done a lot more with that. And now Stanford's running the ball. I'm not triggered. Don't worry about it. Like the Spurs have to find that, like, if you're going to be the team where your defense gets stops, take some moments to execute against the Knicks. To the Knicks. How did you feel about their game three? obviously did not get the win, did some positive things. Jalen Brunson had 32, took 25 shots. Cat's impact felt a little bit more muted, but he still had his moments where he looked like he was going to lift them. The bench gave them solid production. Where are you at with this Knicks? The first time since CJ McCollum told us he was not a villain.
Like, first loss in 46 days is insane for the New York Knicks. So again, salute to that win streak, because that just does not happen. For me, it felt like an odd basketball game. And I can't wait to watch this one back and just pick up on some things that I might have missed live on this one. But it felt odd. And it felt odd from the very beginning, where they pretty much start the game with like two unforced turnovers. And I'm just like, is this just the general angst of being back in Madison Square Garden for a finals game for the first time in a while? Is this just feeling the energy that the Spurs were playing with early on in this one? Like, it just felt odd. And in the first half in particular, you know, they end up making the run in the second quarter. So it certainly wasn't the entire first half. But there were pockets of that first quarter, early second, where I'm just like, the Knicks just feel a lot slower than usual. And I say like 80% of that, I think, is credit to the San Antonio Spurs and their defense. I felt like they dialed back some of the full court pressure that we saw in game two, but they still had the higher pickup points against Jalen Brunson, super physical off the ball. And so the Spurs dictated, much like we talked about their offense, they dictated a lot of terms defensively to start this game as well. So I want to give them their credit. But it's also like, hey, where is the side-to-side stuff? Like, as much as I appreciated OG Anunoby saving the Knicks at the end of possessions and Josh Hart saving the Knicks at the end of possessions, it just started kind of stacking for me. Like, hey, they're doing a lot of saving the Knicks at the end of the clock. Like, this isn't, we run an action, they're helping off of Josh Hart, he's taking a three with 12 on the clock, it goes in or it goes out. It was a whole lot of, you know, the red numbers on the shot clock as we got low. And made shot. And it's like, huh.
This is why I'm happy you do a show with me. Because this is the battle for the Knicks. When it looks good, it looks good, right? I had in my notes as the game was going on, at the end of the third, the Knicks had 33 made field goals, 15 assists. They ended the game with 40 made field goals, 18 assists. So I felt like in the battle of that game, they could have had the bucket getting carry them, which that happens sometimes. But they did not refine the flow they had in the second quarter for the majority of the rest of that game, which to the fourth quarter point, you could have done that if this was a Jalen Brunson night. But could you get Jalen Brunson going early in the third? Like, was there an intentionality in the early portion of the third that you had in the second? Maybe that's where you felt like it was slow. Because I think, without a doubt, the Spurs defense isn't necessarily going away. So it's going to be on the Knicks again to execute and spray and get drives and be intentional and poke at rotations and get themselves in a position where they are getting the Spurs to rotate because of what the Knicks are doing, not specifically because the Spurs want to rotate. So like, I think that's where they have to kind of find a way to live and trust that Cat can win drives against guards, wings, Wimby. Brunson can be your home run hitter. Bridges can play out of the flow. They took a lot of the Bridges flow away. And so how do you kind of gauge where they're winning drives? So let's stick with drive and kick. Let's try and get Jalen Brunson going while he's out here. The minutes where Cat wasn't out there, Brunson, like, do you think it was just a disrupted game? Do you think it was purely Spurs defense? How do we absorb it for the fine folks in the world?
No, I think it was a mix of both. And I think for Mikal in particular, I think the general story for him has been like the Knicks aren't running like 20 things for him a game. Like, he generally has to kind of find it with random cutting, transition attacks, secondary flow. If he has some of those like hybrid units, he gets to run a little bit more stuff. And so when the Knicks got bogged down, I think it takes away some of the Mikal stuff, especially if it's not a night where he's just knocking down the tough shots at the end of the clock. And so if he doesn't have that going and he's also not getting the easy ones, I was looking at cleaning the glass again. I mentioned San Antonio's half court offense. I think both teams were a transition frequency under 10 in this game. Like, this was a very half-court heavy basketball game. And so when you don't have the easy stuff for Mikal, that's where it's just like, can we find a way to get him involved? Can we find a way to just get some pockets so we can get like a random 6-point splurge from him? And so, like, I do think the Spurs deserve credit for, again, putting the Knicks in the mud a little bit. I actually have that in my notes from the first quarter, I think, that the Knicks offense is just in the mud right now. And I think the downstream effect is you don't really get the randomness in flow from Mikal to the same degree.
Well, it ties back to the start of the third, right? Because I feel like a lot of people looked at game two or game one, however you want to feel about it, and said, you know, Jalen Brunson was able to win certain matchups. Julian Champagne had issues guarding Jalen Brunson. The problem is that's not going to stop the Spurs from switching. Like, we're not there yet. That's not going to stop the Spurs from helping. And so if you decide to try and attack that matchup, you bog yourself down to a degree. And Victor Wembanyama is sitting there somewhere. I think the tough part is, and I'll ask this kind of as a question, but like, how have you felt about the Knicks being able to get to their off-ball movement in this series? Because that also feels like a back and forth where they're trying to get movement at times and the Spurs are being physical and they are denying and they are being active. And it's not necessarily having the same impact that we've seen in series prior for the Knicks. So do you feel like the mix was just off? Do you feel like they were just bogged down? Because like, for me, in my head, the Spurs came out blazing in that third quarter defensively.
Mm-hmm.
As far as just a high level of activity, a high level, there's nothing here. We're going to switch. We're going to pressure the ball. You don't have a second action, which we've seen before from them. But it felt like it was stronger in that third. What say you?
No, I come right there with you. Like, I think the Spurs dictated a lot. And I don't think the Knicks always did a good job of kind of playing out of that. Like, even to, we talked about this at the end of the game too. You mentioned it had felt like a ton of like mismatch hunting, et cetera. Jalen Brunson has felt pretty comfortable with the Julian Champagne matchup. Even with him getting those switches, it just felt like there was such a level of, we are chewing up your space when you try to put him in action. And so, like, if we're giving this switch, it's going to take you an extra couple dribbles and an extra couple of seconds for you to even get that matchup. Now you're 35 feet from the basket, and when you line up your one-on-one, you can still win it. You just have a lot more ground to cover to get to the shots that you want to get to. And so, like, I think, again, the Spurs deserve a lot of credit for that. I don't think this is something that is impossible for the Knicks to solve, as we've seen throughout this entire postseason run. And as you've said pretty consistently, they present problems and they solve problems at a high level. So I would imagine that the intentionality for the Knicks offense is going to be better heading into game four. But we're just evaluating what we saw. No, I think a lot of that is just the Spurs said, no, you are not going to be comfortable. And the off-ball physicality point, I think, was a really good one. Because that, to, I guess, circle back to your original question, that's where it has felt kind of wonky in terms of getting to the off-ball flow stuff. Like, there have been, like, pretty loud pockets in game one and some pockets in game two to where you get Cat working as a hub and you kind of play out of the flex screens and stuff behind it. But just the general, let's start Jalen Brunson with like a stagger to set up a touch and stuff like that. It's taking so long to get into that. We get into some denials. You got to go to the other side. Jalen Brunson's getting the ball later in possessions. And again, he can still win those because he's really good at basketball. But conceptually, it did feel more difficult tonight. And so the Knicks are going to have to work to take that kind of stuff off the table.
Now, this is where it gets interesting for me, because I think for the most of this game, it felt like, and this is a credit to the Knicks, during this whole playoff run, they have known who they are on both ends of the floor, and they have stuck to that identity to guide them through tough moments. Whether you're trying to attack Cat, attack Brunson, shots aren't falling. They're facing a Spurs team that also, one, has an identity. We trust our defense. If we get enough stops, we can figure most of this offense stuff out. And if we don't, we're going to try and just make some shots. Because Stephon Castle, what was some of that in the fourth? That fourth quarter, and I wonder how Knicks fans feel about this. I wonder how you feel about this. Both teams shot under 30% from the field. Do you like three-pointers? I hope you didn't. There were three total made. And guess what? They were all towards the end of that fourth quarter. If we can name all of them together. Stephon Castle 3, okay. Jalen Brunson 3, OG Anunoby 3. Those are the three threes that were made. We did it, group. We did it, team. So, and Jalen Brunson was 4 of 7. So how do we digest this? Because did the Spurs kind of get away with not being able to shut the door while also shutting the door? Did the Knicks not do enough to like give themselves enough separation to slam the door positively? Like, how do we absorb that part of it? Because that feels like the only portion that hasn't vibed with what we've seen so far in the series.
Yeah, like, it's been a weird one. And I'll say again, like, I'm excited to watch this game back so I can just feel a little bit better about what the second half was in particular. But no, it just kind of felt like the Knicks couldn't, like, they had shot making stretches. It didn't feel like they found flow in this one pretty consistently, which again, I think the Spurs deserve a lot of credit for. in terms of dictating that and preventing the Knicks to get to that consistently. I think for me, some of the loudest moments in terms of like awkward Spurs defense, they had some really weird like transition matchup possessions that just wasn't, that I just haven't been accustomed to seeing, as the Spurs were just one of the best transition defenses in basketball this year. And a few of those, I was like, hey, do y'all want to grab the right person? Like, there was a play where you have, I think, Devin Vassell and Victor Wembanyama closing out to the same quarter, same corner. OG Anunoby attacks, skips to the opposite side, ball swings, end of the second quarter. Jalen Brunson get that three at the top of the key over Wimby as he's rotating kind of late. I'm just like, hey, I need for y'all to kind of tighten that up. And so it's in there, but it was odd that the Knicks couldn't consistently get to that. Actually, can I toss you a Brunson question? Because one of the other things that you mentioned in our game two reaction pod was that the Spurs hadn't, you know, mentioned that we hadn't been able to get to Brunson or Cat consistently defensively. And as we saw in game three, a lot more drives at Cat. I'm excited to see what the actual numbers are on that front. This felt like the first volume attacking game against Jalen Brunson of the series to me. And I wonder if that kind of registered for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was one of the first things I noted. They want to put Cat in action. They also want to put Brunson in action, and they kept putting Brunson in action to where some of those shows weren't as strong as we've seen before. And so it wasn't an automatic show and recover to a degree. Like, and so I think for me, the evolution, and this is kind of why I brought the I said no pace, no tempo, the flow point. Can the Spurs recognize a moment where we don't have anything in transition? Can we now put Jalen Brunson in action quick? Can we put Cat in action quick? And so they did it at certain times. And I wonder how much of that was he had four fouls in the fourth and also they were in the bonus. But they did seek him out. Now, the interesting part to me that I had in my notes was the moments they put Cat and Brunson in action together and said, you guys are going to be up here and it doesn't matter how we get it, but one of you is going to react and we're going to play out of it. And is that something the Spurs dip their toes into going forward in the series to kind of balance it out? Because again, all you have to do is try and find one thing in the half court that shifts the needle a little bit. I don't know if they're going to get this Knicks group to blink because of the teams the Knicks have had to play and the trust the Knicks have in their defense. It never really felt like Brunson was quote-unquote in danger to a degree, but it did feel different than the quick show and recovers we had seen up until this point. And they did ding Cat's drop way more in this game than they had before. It's not to say Cat had a terrible defensive game. There's just an intentionality from the Spurs to sweet backpedal coming at you full force. Actually, and also, you know, it ties in with the Cat part. It ties into they really didn't let the guards and wings recover. Like the screen navigation aspect is so important when it comes to drop. Like part of this was weak side tag. It was Wembanyama. Cat or Robinson's not engaged, so they can now just get back to you. So you don't fully get behind them, plus you've been hit, and we have our guard or wing back in front of the ball handler. That was kind of the perfect formula for them. San Antonio dinged that. So, like, that's what I'm keeping an eye on. Can they have all three of those things going at the same time going forward? That's where I think you get into a series in the half court. Now, if you're New York, you got to feel like Jalen Brunson can play better. Cat can play better. Our defense can likely play better. If we take these guards and get them back in the box we had them in, we make it tough on Wimby again. We go up 3-1. We play Empire State of Mind. Then we go back to Texas for one game. That's got to be the vibe, right?
That indeed has to be the vibe. And as you were saying that, Steve, I was trying to see if the second spectrum numbers had been updated from tonight. And we sure do have them. So with Karl-Anthony Towns defending pick and roll tonight, 32 screens defended, 1.11 points per possession on any trip featuring a pick and roll defended by Karl-Anthony Towns. That, my friend, is easily the highest mark that we've seen in the series so far. So again, to your point, the Spurs were intentional about going at him and they had success on that front. To the Jalen Brunson portion, we had a graphic up on screen a little bit earlier, but through the first two games of the series, Jalen Brunson was the pick and roll screener defender 24 times through the first two games. 1.2 points per possession on those trips. So very high number, effective when the Spurs got to it, but the volume was kind of like in the middle. Like we've seen higher points early in the Atlanta series. We've seen in the Cleveland series in particular where they had one game where Brunson had to defend 24 of them. Per second spectrum tonight, Steve, Jalen Brunson, the pick and roll screener defender 21 times. in this game. So 24 through the first two games. 24 through the first two games, 21 tonight, about a point per possession on those trips. So something to keep an eye on if the Spurs feel like, hey, we are going to be more intentional about this. And even if we don't score, at the very least, we may draw some fouls or we're just getting some body blows and we're just making him work. And I think as we kind of zoom out with this series so far, and I, you know, I said after the game, Tupac, like Jalen Brunson hasn't shot well, but he's kept consistent pressure on the Spurs because of how good he is and the attention that he draws, et cetera. This is another game where Jalen Brunson hasn't been like his usual self inside the arc. And so like the sample keeps building that he hasn't had that. He's had stretches, very important stretches, fourth quarter of game one, pretty much decent, you know, like he's had pockets of this. But it hasn't been like consistently efficient inside the arc. Like it is still kind of difficult to deal with Stephon Castle for minutes at a time, dealing Harper with high pressure. As we talked about a little bit earlier tonight, you can get the Julian Champagne switch. You're going to have to work a little bit harder for it. You're getting pushed further out when you get it, and you still have to worry about some of the roaming that's happening behind it. And so I am curious to see, and I think it's fair to at least ask the question, what can the Knicks do to make life a little bit easier for Jalen Brunson? Because if the Spurs are taking away some of the off-ball package, the on-ball stuff is just pressure field. Like it can, in a literal sense, just be Jalen Brunson knocked down tough shots because he's good enough to do so. But in an ideal world, you would like to manufacture some easier looks for him. Through three games of the series, it hadn't felt like a ton of that.
It's the finals. Easy looks are hard to find. It's true. Hard to find, hard to beat. That's where we're at. Oh. I mean, I think it's one of the deals where the Knicks have to find a way to get to the blend offensively. Like the Jalen Brunson attacks have to be quicker. It's not necessarily about, okay, can we draw something up for him that's going to be easier? It's just, okay, can he start to win some matchups again? Can we get him some high screens? Can he turn the corner? Because he wanted to put Wimby in action in that fourth quarter. We're not talking about it because the Knicks didn't win the game. But, you know, the Knicks were cycling actions to get the Spurs to pre-switch and then bring Wimby's Batman back up at the end of the play so he would be involved. Brunson turned the corner and got a finish on him. Can he get to Wimby in pick and roll? Can he win matchups one-on-one? Can they kind of just use him throughout the game and as the closer is more so probably the bit. I think the foul trouble affected his rhythm. I think the stagnation from the Knicks affected everyone's rhythm. You know, as far as I'm just kind of reading some quotes from Mike Brown, you know, saying that we literally just stood and watched. There was literally no movement. So I imagine they'll be more focused and intentional as far as trying to get back to their flow, get more drive and kick and open things up. But I think it's just if they are doing those other things, Jalen Brunson will find his pockets because he still was comfortable in space and pick and roll at times. It's just, okay, did this become a game where we need Jalen Brunson to do X, Y, and Z when Jalen Brunson didn't like the – You ever try and put some like chicken in the air fryer and it's not all the way ready? Like it's hot, but it's not like, you know what I mean? It's not, it's not the temperature you set. Yeah, it's so, you know, that'd be a struggle.
Understood. Why are we here? You know what? I was thinking about the funny sequences in this game as we get to like the empty the note section of this. A funny thing for me, I want to say early second quarter, I think is when it was. And I was so, like, basketball annoyed because, like, I'm watching Carter Bryant, like, knocks down a corner three, blocks a jumper on the other end. I'm, like, trying to get the clips together, tweet them out, like, hey, this is a nice stint for Carter Bryant. And, like, two times in three possessions, shot goes up, shoulder chuck to Karl Anthony Towns, dumb foul. I'm just like, brother, please let me cheer for you. Please. Let me say nice things. It's just a young player in the spot like that. Like it's no big deal. But the Carter Bryant portion has been interesting for me all series long. Cause it's not like he's going to give you 25, 30 minutes, but they kind of need him to maintain that consistent wave of defensive pressure. And so the times he's matched up against Jalen Brunson in those minutes is like, ooh, there are some wins here. Also, you know, go back to game one, Jalen Brunson found comfort very early on. It's like, ooh, that might not go super well. So I'm excited to see what that's going to look like. I would like to see a consistent stretch of quality play for Carter Bryant. So I want to sprinkle that in. I did chuckle at how quickly that went downhill.
Uh-huh.
You said
empty the notes. So I'm going to – what else you got in the emptying the notes portion?
Oh, dear. So we had that. We had, I think, Devin Vassell and Landry Shamet. Was it Devin Vassell and Landry Shamet that had the brief antics?
Yeah.
And then we got healthy Josh Hart, Luke Burnett antics. We're getting to the we don't really like y'all like that portion of the program. So that part's getting fun. I'm trying to think, is there anything else super important that I wanted to get to in this? I don't think so. This is a fun game. I'll leave it there.
Take us home, man.
Not take us home. Salute to the San Antonio Spurs. We will see y'all on Wednesday night. But no, in all seriousness, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. We will be back after game 4 as well to give our live reaction. So stay tuned on that front. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel. That's where our WNBA content is going. That's going to be popping up on Wednesday instead of tomorrow. So just don't be alarmed on that front. We got some fun stuff coming for you this week. You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all soon.